This is Outspoken, the podcast that's not afraid to say exactly what you're thinking.
Our names are Amy, Kate and Sophie Torber. We're identical triplets, but we often don't have identical opinions. So sometimes things can get heated.
Outspoken covers all things reality TV, influencers, entertainment and issues facing women.
That is so fetch.
Thank you.
Hello and welcome back to Outspoken. Now, we thought we would start the episode by giving you a little bit of an insight into what it's really like working with your sisters.
I feel like it's no secret that we argue from time to time. I mean, we've had full-blown arguments on this podcast.
I know. I've even listened back to the start of episodes where my voice is like hoarse because we've had like a very heated argument before we've got into recording about what we're going to be talking about.
Yeah. Well, the other night we all had a girls' night at Sophie's house and we decided to watch the Veronica's reality MTV show. And oh my gosh, I've never related to a clip of two people fighting ever so much in my life.
Yeah, I felt like it really encapsulates what our arguments are like without having to actually air our own dirty laundry and show really what we argue like.
I think we should go to a clip and have a listen at how they fight with each other.
So Lise forgot the black latex bodysuit again.
I had to pack three suitcases full of stuff and I had all the beads, all the dresses, the blue and the pink latex.
If it's too much responsibility to remember
it,
I will take it off you. I don't mind.
Listen to me.
Yes, you have it.
No, you had the red and the black latex bodysuit.
I have the red, you have
the black latex pants.
You have the black latex bodysuit from the heaven party.
I'll go find the text message right now.
Go find it.
How about that? Good, I will. Once I actually have the time. Now, you took my makeup. Where did you put it?
I didn't take your makeup. It's probably sitting in the same place as the black latex.
You are a nightmare to be around. I packed both of the knee-high
boots. I know. Thank
you.
Shut the fuck up.
I told you I will take anything.
You only packed everything that I already had.
You forfeit the right of having any opinion right now unless you show respect when I'm speaking and stop. It's not like we don't have a billion other options.
I know, but literally the black latex is actually a staple piece and you know that.
No, Jess. Honestly, we've worn it to everything.
No, don't say I'm sorry. Don't say no, say I'm
apologizing.
Yes, you don't ever fucking apologize.
Because I'm not enabling your behavior right now. The higher your hair gets, the more bitchy you're becoming.
The first thing I loved about this fight is the fact that they are openly arguing in front of a room full of people. And I just love how awkward the people look.
I really felt for our best friend Owen because I felt like it showed what she must feel like in those moments where Sophie, Amy and I are having massive arguments and she's just awkwardly there trying not to like be on anyone's side.
Do you know what though? So many people have told us that our fights are funny to watch and watching them, I finally understood, it actually is quite entertaining. It also brought me back to a fight that we had on our girls' trip with Owen in Penang, where it was a fight about communism, of all things.
But that's the thing, like, not that that's a small issue, but I mean, most of the arguments we have are brought on by the most minute thing.
I think, though, the topic in question is not usually where the argument is stemming from. No. It's usually used as a vehicle for other issues to be raised.
The other bit of the Veronica's fight I really related to was how they overcome their argument. So let's have a listen to this clip.
As soon as you hear us start to call each other Chi-Chi, you know that the fight is over and the white flag is waving.
You can even just do it around there and do it as a moment. Chi-Chi, look, if I had the black latex bodysuit, this could have been a moment.
This is us to a T. I mean, I'm going to be honest. We've lived with each other for 30 years. So, yeah, there has been points where we've almost had physical fights.
Well,
we have had physical fights. There's been shoes thrown at each other's,
the muffin throwing incident.
The worst thing is that sometimes these arguments would be captured on Snapchat secretly. And sometimes I get these memories pop up of when we live together and like Brandon will be like, what are you watching? I'm like, nothing.
Well, that's what I was going to say. It's like, that's the point where it's, you know, quite a crazy fight. But literally I'd say 10 minutes later, we will just be putting on these little voices to each other and calling up, yeah, their cute little names.
Darling.
Like, darling, stop it.
Darling.
And literally everything will be fine.
Yeah.
It's our boyfriends can't work it out.
Do you know what's funny? Seeing how other siblings resolve some arguments or the fact that they don't argue at all.
I would like to know, is it just a multiple birth thing? Because we've obviously had to share the womb with each other. We're that close and just like the Veronicas. So when I saw them, I was like, is it multiple births or is it like girls and girls arguing?
Well, we're going to put the question in our Facebook group, which is Outspoken, the podcast Facebook community. And we want to know, what are the biggest arguments you've ever had with a sibling? And do you relate to the Veronica?
Well, I'd also like to throw in there, what's the like biggest argument you've had over something ridiculously small that didn't even matter?
Yeah, what triggers the arguments? Because for us, it's usually clothes and
makeup,
boyfriends, stealing each other's things.
Yeah.
It's really anything.
Very trivial things.
Mm. Even just the way something is phrased towards someone.
And as we said, communism apparently is another point of argument.
Hi, sisters!
Influencer James Charles has hit out at Instagram, claiming a change in the platform's algorithm has caused his likes to drop from 4 million to 1 million per post. In the 8-minute long video, the beauty influencer explained that while he can survive with a 75% drop in engagement, a lot of other creators cannot. Amy, what are your thoughts on what James Charles said?
Well, I really love the fact that James Charles came out and made an Insta story about this topic. And I think first we should have a listen to what exactly
he said.
Can
I just say it's quite ironic that he used Instagram to share the story that he's not happy with Instagram.
Instagram would have been like, yeah, let's get this algorithm low for this post.
Anyway, let's throw to the clip.
There has been a massive, major change in the Instagram algorithm that I have noticed, that other big creators have noticed, and that I know for a fact small businesses and small artists have definitely noticed because it affects them the most. And Instagram is sitting here adding all these features that nobody's asking for, pretending like nothing's happening, nothing is changing, all while ignoring everybody who's giving them feedback and saying that they don't like the direction that the app is going. It's crazy to me.
So I thought this was a really interesting point that James Charles made. He first came out and said that, of course, he's being selfish in making this post because it is affecting his business. But what about the people who are small creators or small businesses? I mean, a 75% decrease in people coming to your account is a huge number, and it could be killing a lot of businesses.
And it's really difficult if the creators of that platform can't understand what's going on, which is going to have a trickle-down effect to brands, because brands aren't going to know why people are getting a 75% decrease, and they're going to assume that those influencers are people that they no longer want to work with.
I've got a theory. Did Instagram get rid of likes so that it wouldn't be apparent how much this drop was occurring for regular people, so they just weren't across the fact that there was an algorithm change? Because unless you're working with someone like James Charles, you're not privy to all of his stats.
Well, James Charles has said he's only seen a change in algorithm in the last 2 months. So his posts were getting 4 million likes. They're now getting 1 million likes. And he said he's done nothing. He hasn't changed how many times he's posting. He's responding to fans. He's doing all the right things. And all it points to is the fact that Instagram has made an algorithm change. However, they haven't announced any change, which is what he's so angry about, because brands will be saying, well, what's the problem? Because Instagram haven't, you know, announced anything has changed.
Well, what they have actually made an announcement about is additions that they've made to the platform. So Instagram IGTV creators now have the option to turn on automatic captions for their videos, which are available in 16 different languages.
That's good.
Which make the platform a lot more inclusive to people that obviously can't hear.
It's a great idea though as well.
Oh, but it's also for people who are just at work on Instagram and don't want to listen to the audio.
Yeah, that too, which I'm actually loving, because I noticed on the Instagram stories now, you can even, you write your caption or whatever, but you can have it as rolling text as well, which is pretty cool. They have also introduced a new map and calendar tool, which I'm actually not familiar with yet, which allows people to browse old stories by date and location.
Oh my God.
What, from other people's?
Yeah.
Well, that's insane.
That's like
game-changing. Oh yeah. God. I would have loved that about 5 years ago.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say it was a map like on Snapchat, which I was going to say,
that's pretty dangerous.
Well, that would be pretty tough for influencers to be on and celebrities.
Well, there's also, they've made some changes to Reels. Now Reels can be 30 seconds long rather than 15 seconds. Did you guys know about this one? So Instagram, to celebrate its 10th birthday, has introduced that you can change the Instagram icon on your phone. So what you have to do is you go into your settings and you pull the page down until you see confetti animation, and then it will allow you to choose between like the normal Instagram logo, the classic, and the retro one.
I feel like it's all smoke and mirrors. They're introducing all of these fancy new things, but yet hiding the fact that the algorithm has changed and that this will drastically affect businesses online.
Well, that's exactly what James Charles said. He said, while Instagram are bringing in all these new features, they're not actually acknowledging the changes that a lot of creators are having a problem with. Number one being the algorithm change.
Yeah, well, for me, it's quite obvious that Instagram have a real focus on monetization and commerce, which is what the top executive at Instagram, Tom Mazzario, actually announced. And he said, we're working on a number of new features to help creators making a living. Expect more updates soon. He also hinted more audience insights may soon be available to businesses and creator accounts. But to me, it's what they're actually doing is very counterintuitive to the creators. They're claiming, oh no, we're going to make it easier for you guys to earn money on the platform. Mm. But that's not the issue. The issue is that for a long time, influencers have been earning a lot of money from the platform, but Instagram themselves have not. But so that's quite clear why they are making changes.
But also, it's like, here's all these tools so you can be better at influencing or making your business page go off, but then we're going to cut down your engagement so much.
Well, it's very obvious that Instagram just want influencers and businesses to pay to be seen on the app, which is what exactly happened to Facebook and why Facebook is now so unpopular. I mean, yes, we all go on it, but we don't use it how we used to use it. And I feel like Instagram is going to turn into the same thing.
Well, James Charles made a really good point. He said that it is embarrassing that his likes have gone down from 4 million to 1 million. And although he's more concerned about what it means for smaller businesses and also his business, it does bring up a very good point of, will people be posting? I know likes have been taken away, but let's be honest, we can still see, you know, there's ways around seeing people's engagement.
You can jump on your desktop and have a look.
Yeah, but as soon as someone, like, if I like your post, Amy, I can then click on and see how many people have liked it. Yes, I have to manually count it, but it gives me an idea of how many likes you've gotten.
Well, Instagram actually came out and said that one of the reasons for taking away likes was to increase user engagement on Instagram, so people wouldn't care about posting a photo if it didn't get many likes. But what James Charles is saying, these new changes are making people get 75% less engagement, and people are tweeting and saying, I don't even feel like posting a photo on Instagram because it's just embarrassing.
Well, talking about the changes, obviously Instagram haven't actually come out and said that there are any, but what are people actually thinking has been changed with the algorithm?
Well, there are thoughts that the algorithm is favoring people whose photos are saved. So I actually never do that. I never save people's photos, but a lot of people are saying that this change in algorithm is actually favoring people who post, you know, like bikini thirst trap pics, because let's be honest, that's what some men and I suppose some women are also saving on their phones.
Yeah, I noticed that Jade Tunchi was actually asking her followers to start saving pictures if they wanted to see her in their newsfeed. It does make me think, is Instagram turning more into Pinterest? Because that's a very Pinterest style thing. I mean, you obviously go on there, you find an aesthetic that you like, maybe you're planning a wedding or redecorating or looking at fashion, and you save the pins. So it feels to me like Instagram is rebelling from what is now becoming a place where it's favoring authenticity.
But it completely contradicts their first message when they got rid of the likes. They said, we want you to feel comfortable to post regularly whatever you want. But then they're saying you have to post images that are good enough to be saved and used on other platforms. It makes no sense.
Yeah, it seems like they're trying to push back to a time when feeds were really curated and people are only wanting to save these very perfect images to try and replicate.
I think it's a very dumb business move. It's not reflective of what society wants at the moment. Especially with the pandemic, I feel like people are pushing against that perfect ideal.
Just a thought though, could it actually advantage some small creators? Because think about it, you know, like people who post about their pantries and their organizational photos, people would be saving that type of content. I mean, I wouldn't go and save influencers like glamorous shots. It would be more business pages I'd be saving.
Yeah, but it's dependent on what you're looking for. So there's a lot of young people out there that may save influencers glamorous shots because they like that clothing style or that makeup.
Let's be honest, it's men saving photos for a wank bank. Like, that is what it is. I'm just going to say it. That's who's photos.
I don't think that's everyone, but that would be a large portion, I believe, of an audience that will now be favouring bikini photos.
But on the other hand, I feel like people who run social media accounts for a living, they save photos as inspiration from other accounts. But is that just encouraging people to steal photos and copy one another's photos?
Well, it's interesting you say that, because one of the new features Instagram have added is similar to what Facebook's feature is in terms of copywriting. So Facebook actually have a feature that I didn't even know about until today called Facebook Rights Manager, and it's a tool designed to help you find any of your copyrighted images that you've submitted for protection on the platform and manage them accordingly. So now you can do that with Instagram. You can say, okay, well, I've taken this beautiful photo, and you can have Instagram track it and then serve those people with sort of an infringement to let them know, hey, that's actually your photo, which is an interesting step to protect creators.
But then they're encouraging people to save them. So
yeah,
it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I suppose you can save them, but once you replicate them and pass them off as your own work, it's not fair.
Well, I had a look on Social Blade, which is a website where you can look at different influencers' engagement. And currently, James Charles has 8.63% engagement on his Instagram page.
And that's really good. That's a really high engagement. So it's crazy to think he actually had four times the amount previously.
Well, I had a look at some of the Aussie influencers because I thought everyone might be interested. And it's crazy to see who's doing really well. So Bella from The Bachelor, her engagement is more than James Charles.
Really?
Her engagement is 9.14%. Yeah, but that's just the
percent, though. It doesn't mean there's more people.
Yeah, but the percentages are comparable of the audience.
And over the last 30 days, Bella's Instagram has grown by 34,000. So she has a total of 109,000 followers. So that is growing at an amazing rate.
Well, that's pretty expected when you've been on the finale of The Bachelor. Yeah. I feel like we'll look in 30 days' time and that growth will not be there anymore.
Well, last time I looked at Becky, who's one of The Bachelorette, she had 25,000 followers. I think it is indicative of the ratings for that show at the moment, though.
Well, Becky's engagement is 5.8%, but it's crazy. You look at Abby Chatfield, she's got 6.17% engagement, but look at someone like Tully Smythe and her engagement is 0.6%.
That really surprised me, but I suppose when you look at someone like Abby Chatfield, who is consistently connecting with her audience in a very relatable and authentic way, people are going to be drawn to that type of content.
I had a look at Talia Skaines' engagement on Social Blade, and she's currently at 2.3%, and she does post a lot of bikini pics, so it will be interesting to see if that figure does go up over the next couple of weeks.
And I'm really intrigued to see if Instagram slowly does start taking some of that power away from influencers, because it does indeed seem like that is what their end goal is.
And it seems to already be happening. You know, you've got the Instagram's biggest influencers calling them out.
But how dumb, because everyone's just going to go away from the app. I mean, TikTok's threatening Instagram in terms of popularity. And why would you be pissing people off like James Charles?
Maybe they're getting too big for their boots now that TikTok is potentially being shut down in America.
Maybe.
Hi, I'm Molly Mae Hague. I've got a text.
This week, Love Island star Molly Mae Hague revealed to her 4.9 billion followers that she needs further surgery after having a mole removed on her leg. The 21-year-old said while she's very scared, she wants her story to raise awareness. Skin cancer is ranked as the most common cancer amongst Brits aged 15 to 34, with many viewing solariums as a healthy way to get vitamin D. Sophie, can you talk us through what's happening with Molly Mae?
Well, Molly Mae's been very vocal sharing this on her Instagram, and last month it started with a photo that she shared showing her bandaged leg, and she explained that she had to have a mole removed after getting multiple opinions from different doctors who suggested it may become cancerous at some stage.
This kind of freaked me out because she said she went to two doctors that told her that it was fine. So it just shows how important it is to follow these things up if you are concerned about something.
Well, it was actually Molly's mum who first noticed the mole, and that was when she was in the Love Island villa. So it has been something, I think, that's been playing on Molly's mind a lot. So she told her followers this week that she is awaiting further surgery after she had the mole removed on her leg. And she told fans that she wasn't going to go into detail until she had her results back. She wrote, "So about 3 weeks ago now, I was advised that a mole I had on my leg needed removing. I had the procedure done within a few days. Last week, I received my results back, and it's safe to say they were not at all what I was expecting. I've been trying to process the information I received whilst being super busy with work, and it's not been easy." She then went on to say, "I'm still not able to give my full diagnosis until my further surgery has taken place and have received those results, but for now, I'm just trying to stay positive. I never thought at 21 something like this would happen to me, and it's very scary, but all I know is that I absolutely need to share my story and what I'm going through to raise awareness of this situation. I'll keep you updated as much as I can. I've already received so many lovely messages from you guys, and I appreciate it so much." The thing that I've taken away from this is that Molly has been so brave in documenting her experience and also urging followers to be very vigilant, especially when it's not really something that seems to be taken seriously in the UK.
You forget that she's only 21. I mean, that really shocks me. And it is very mature of her to use her experience to educate others, especially when she doesn't really know what's going to happen. It seems very up in the air, obviously waiting on a lot of test results. I mean, I just feel stressed thinking about it for her.
Well, what it really shone a light on for me was the ingrained tanning culture that actually exists in the UK. It's crazy because for a country that's very dreary, gloomy, and there isn't really much sun about the place, it's funny how tanning is so popular there.
Yeah, it did shock me that skin cancer was the leading cancer in young people in the UK when, as you said, many of them don't actually go out in the sun, and it's only on holidays overseas that they are exposed to the sunlight.
I have actually noticed that because I do follow a lot of UK influencers, and they clearly haven't had the same sun safe messages that we have. You know, at school it was you got to slip, slop, slap before you go out, whereas they're like, oh my goodness, it's sunny, I've got to go out and I've got to get my vitamin D and I've got to sit in the sun all day.
Well, it makes sense because they don't see a lot of the sun. So in Australia, we have to, those are things that we have to do all the time.
Well, it's really interesting when you do look into the history of the tanning culture over there, and it really became popular with the accessibility of foreign travel. So in the later half of the 20th century, we saw more people traveling for the first time. So sun tanning became something that was actually glamorous and showed wealth rather than it representing poverty. So for the first time, it was really cool and glamorous to have a tan.
Well, I don't know about other people, but I feel like it's pretty easy to spot the English people when you're overseas. So when we've holidayed in Malaysia, you can see the people a mile away because they're often completely sunburned and red, and they just spend their whole holiday sunbaking.
Well, you could say that for Australians as well.
But that's the thing. Like, after speaking to a number of people in our community and also doing our research, it's actually crazy because tanning beds were first developed in 1891 by the man who created Kellogg's Corn Flakes.
What?
And they were brought out because they said they were really good for you, so they helped you with vitamin D. So I think that there's this ingrained theory amongst the UK that, oh, it's really healthy to go into these things. And it shocked me. There are actually 8,000 sun tanning beds in the UK.
It's gross because in Australia they've been banned because we know that they're not healthy at all, that they're very dangerous. Well,
they're carcinogenic at the end of the day. Studies show that even just one session in one of these sunbeds can increase your chances of melanoma by 20% and your chances of other skin cancers increase by 67%. And that is just one time in a sunbed.
That is so scary. I know of so many people that have actually used sun tanning beds back in the day, probably like 10, 15 years ago.
It's crazy because the stats show that between the ages of 15 to 34, the most common cancer is skin cancer. And it's not a surprise when you go for a walk down one of the main streets in England. There are sunbed places everywhere. And what's most disturbing is that children are using these beds. It showed that 43% of 14 to 16-year-olds have used sun tanning beds at least once. And an even more disturbing stat showed that 8 to 11-year-olds are using sun tanning beds, with 7% of these children using them once every fortnight.
What the hell? Like, it blows my mind. Growing up, our mum was so vigilant about sun care. Like, and I feel so lucky that she was. I mean, we hated it, having to put sun cream on every day and wearing hats and wearing rashes. But I'm so thankful now. Yeah, it is so scary to think that these kids are putting themselves at risk of melanoma.
But the thing is, what's sad is the parents think that they're probably doing the right thing because it's been ingrained in them that it's healthy to have a suntan. It's healthy to get vitamin D. So they're probably thinking, oh yeah, I'll let the kids go in there. They don't get much sun.
I wonder if it's got anything to do with shows like Geordie Shore and The Only Way is Essex, because a lot of them promote sunbeds and obviously fake tan as well. But, well, I mean, Molly May herself promotes fake tanning, which I found was kind of not ironic, but it was interesting that she obviously a big part of her image is having a beautiful tan.
Well, even inside the villa on Love Island, they're constantly out sunbaking, and you do wonder if they are provided with sun cream.
Well, that's the first thing I thought of, because watching it from a perspective of always being forced to wear sun cream as a kid, when I watched them tanning basically all day in very like small clothing, like bathers, I kind of made me feel sick. And all I could think of was, oh my gosh, their poor skin. And I do wonder if Love Island has any sort of OHS safety obligations, considering it essentially was a workplace. And there are some rumors that they do make them wear bikinis during the day and that they're made to sit outside. So,
well, the thing is that skin cancers can happen to anybody. You can be out in the sun. Like, it only takes a few times getting burnt. And so in that sense, it is, of course, the responsibility of the person to wear sun cream. And, you know, as I said, you can get burnt a few times and pick up a skin cancer. So we don't want to be blaming anyone.
Oh, I'm not trying to blame anyone, but there are definitely obligations that workplaces have to take on board. It would be, for example, if you were working, putting music together and were always listening to loud concerts, then your hearing is going to be affected. So there are steps in place that workplaces need to provide you with adequate protection. So it's the same thing with sun cream on a show like Love Island, where you're outside all the time.
That being said, this could be Love Island's huge opportunity to promote sun cream as a cool thing to wear. They need to be showing the contestants putting on the sun cream.
I really hope so.
I really hope they do that, but I also hope that they shut down some of these bloody sunbeds. It's really disturbing because stats show that in the last 3 decades, the rates of skin cancer have quadrupled, and it is down to these bloody sunbeds. If you take a walk through the main streets of England, there are so many of these beds out there, and it's really disturbing because there's even slot machines where you can go and just put a couple of coins in one of these machines. There's no one working there, so it's not regulated. Kids can go in them. It's not regulated how long you're in these machines, what type of skin you have. It's just disgusting.
Well, you know what really disturbs me? They have been shut down in Australia, which is fantastic, but you can still purchase sunbeds in Australia. So I have a friend who has a sunbed that uses it at home.
When I was working at Today Tonight, we did a story about sunbed usage, and this was on the cusp of when they were going to be outlawed. And you actually had to fill in a little survey of what your skin was like, except you could totally botch it. I could say that I had olive skin and they'd let me in straight away. So they actually need to outlaw it completely because you can't be trusted. Like, people can't be trusted to...
It definitely shouldn't be self-regulation.
No, exactly.
Well, I really hope in the next couple of weeks that we do hear some good news from Molly May about her surgery. And it's just really great that she is shining a light on the matter. It's Sky-Marie
Wheatley. Let's get into our influencer wrap. Soph, can you start us off?
Well, we really have to take our hats off to Instagram page Celeb Spellcheck for this one. They were first to break this story. And it is, of course, that Sky Wheatley has announced baby number 2 is on the way.
And Celeb Spellcheck, they were on this a few weeks ago. They were picking up the signs before anyone else noticed.
So for those who haven't seen it, Sky made the announcement with a photo shoot, which was professionally styled. And her family posed in beige outfits outside a white mansion. And they basically held up a sonogram showing their new baby.
Yeah, and Sky had been talking about this photo shoot for quite a few weeks, so it was kind of obvious that this was going to happen, so we were just really waiting for the photo to drop. And I don't think it disappointed. It was very Sky. It was very over the top and really didn't make much sense as to why they needed to have a full-on photo shoot and video shoot.
Well, 3 weeks ago, she posted a rather misleading photos which made her followers believe that she was actually having twins. She posted a selfie where Lockie had his hand on her stomach. I was about to say Fox. Forrest. Forrest was in the photo, and she wrote, "And then there were 5. Now, for those who actually had eagled eyes, they would have spotted that their dash hounds, Winston and Crunchy, were seen in the background. So that's who she was apparently indicating to. So her comments were filled with people being like, oh my God, this is the pregnancy announcement. So she responded in her comments confirming that she wasn't pregnant and that the next baby announcement would be far more epic than a mirror selfie.
The announcement did kind of make more sense as to why she was reminiscing over old photos of herself and her smaller waist.
Yeah, it definitely did bring a bit more context there. I'm looking forward to finding out what she's going to name this child and what the sex of it's going to be, because with a name like Forrest, I don't think she's going to have a regular boy or girl's name.
I know. I'm also hoping, I mean, I hope it's just a healthy baby, but I would love to see her with a girl. I'd find that very interesting to see how she dresses her up. And also, what I'm looking forward to seeing is more of those epic McDonald's mukbangs. So once they had done their photo shoot and announced it, Sky was putting on her story that they went and got, there was like 2 massive bags of McDonald's between the two of them.
There was also, she also had that epic chocolate pudding as well. Made me so hungry.
I know. I very much look forward to more of that sort of content.
Well, another influencer who's been talking about big life events is Sarah's Day.
I found this one so exciting. On Sunday, Sarah announced to her followers that she would be going wedding dress shopping for the first time. Now, of course, Sarah and Kurt got engaged in Hawaii in December last year. And 2 months ago, they shared a vlog where they traveled to Byron Bay to plan their wedding. And basically, Sarah talked about the fact that they have put the wedding plans on hold while she's renovating and also while her cooking project is nearing its end. Sarah did admit, though, that she had a bit of an intervention and disagreement with her father, who said that she needs to make it a priority to get married. Sarah's dad seems quite religious.
Yeah.
And Sarah has been speaking about the fact that she wants to have a sibling for Fox sometime soon. So he said, hey, Sarah, if you don't do this now, you'll never get married.
Yeah, but I mean, the issue is as well that if she wants to have a baby soon, it will just push out the wedding later, because she said before that she doesn't want to have her wedding while she's pregnant. Mm. So it does make sense. I think that her dad's giving her some good advice. I'm going to be a little bit cynical here. And as much as I really do want to watch the content, it is an interesting time that she's now announcing that she's suddenly interested in her wedding, because she has just finished her renovation series on YouTube, and there is one final episode to go, which is the unveiling of the project. But it seems like a very wise move, but also one that she's taken from a business perspective to start being, oh, okay, I'm going to start planning my wedding and sharing that.
I think that's an incredibly cynical way to look at it.
That's what I said. I introduced it as being cynical.
Well, it is a cynical way to look. I think that she's merely just sharing her life. I mean, I think if she didn't share her wedding dress experience, or she didn't share her wedding, her followers would be very, very disappointed.
I think that's a little naive. Yes, her job is to share her life, but she has become known for making quite a lot of money and monetizing her life events, like the unveiling of Fox's name and his gender reveal and her whole pregnancy journey. Like, those videos would have made her a lot of money. And I know there's a demand to see them, but I'm just saying, she is putting her businesswoman hat on and saying, yep, the next lot of videos are going to be wedding focused.
So what I don't get is why it suddenly makes someone so evil to be thinking like that.
I didn't say it made her evil.
I'm not saying, but there's always this like connotation that she's always up to something. And when I watched that Insta story, I was like, oh, wow, lots of people will be excited by this, because we all want to have a nosy look into her wedding. And lots of us have seen her relationship blossom with Kurt. A lot of people saw her meet him. Now we're excited and we're invested as followers to see her wedding. So for me, I think that's kind of nice that she's sharing it with people. It's not, I get what you're saying. It's going to get a lot of views, but let's be honest, most influencers' money doesn't actually come from the YouTube views. It comes from the products they bring out.
I am very interested to see, though, how much of the wedding is sponsored.
Well, this might play into your hands a little bit, Kate, with your theory. She did tag the name of the bridal store, which is Hope Times Page. I took a further look into it. The dresses range from about $3,500 to $5,000. And it's an appointment-only boutique. So basically, you have to pay $30 to have a stylist there come and talk you through the dresses.
To me, that kind of sounds quite normal, though.
Yeah.
I would have thought she, knowing what her wealth potentially is like, she would have gone even to a more expensive.
No, I more meant it played into your hands because she is tagging, who presumably she's getting a dress through.
And in no way am I saying that I am begrudging this, because I cannot wait to see this footage. I'm just saying it's quite interesting, the timing around.
That being said, if you look broadly at influencers, when they do share some of these small boutiques, it's actually great because it puts them in front of a huge new customer base of people, particularly during the economic crisis. It is good that some of these people are getting extra exposure.
Is it a Cronulla-based bridal shop, or did they?
It's half an hour out of Sydney.
Oh, interesting.
Well, what about Sarah's other news? Because she and Kurt have announced that they're dropping daily episodes of The Health Code, which is their podcast.
Well, I feel a bit ripped off because apparently the episodes are only 5 minutes long.
It's a very clever business move from Sarah and Kurt. If you think about it, they have a massive audience. I believe they've had around 10 to 20 million downloads of their regular series.
Which is quite rare because they don't really upload on a regular basis.
Yeah, it's very sporadic. And if you think about it, they don't have to put a huge amount of effort into recording a quick 5-minute bite-sized episode. They could literally record a bunch of them, have them all ready to go. They could put dynamic ads on each of those episodes where you can earn quite a bit of money if you're getting 10 million downloads.
Well, it's also obvious because they said that the episodes are only available on Spotify. So I'm guessing that there's a partnership between them and Spotify, and they would be getting a considerable amount of money for it.
Well, moving along, and someone else who's been popping up in our newsfeed is Jade Twinchy. Kate, can you tell us what's happened there?
Well, Jade actually shared 2 months ago an update to her 444,000 followers on Instagram that she had received some bad news regarding her pap smear, which is now known as a cervical cancer screening. So her doctor gave her a call and told her that some high-grade abnormalities had been found during the test and that she would need to go have some further investigation. Jade also mentioned that she had been diagnosed with the HPV virus, which is a very common virus that a lot of people now know about since they've changed the screening process. So I just thought it was fantastic that she was raising awareness for something that so many people don't talk about. And 2 days ago, she gave us a little bit of an update saying she'd had a biopsy taken of her cervix and it did confirm that there were high-grade abnormalities and she is going to have to book in to have a LEAP procedure, which is basically a procedure where they shave a little bit of affected cells and hope to remove the cells. Mm. Now that the new testing has been introduced, there are so many women that are getting back these results that they have HPV and that there are cell changes because the test is completely different to what it was like a while ago. Well, I think it's really great that she is normalizing it because so many women have had test results come back recently that say they have HPV because the testing has changed. So I think it's great.
Well, to be completely honest, at the start of the year, I had a similar scare. I was called up and told that I had low-grade changes. And for me, it was really terrifying because it is such a new test that I didn't know whether it was normal or who else had experienced it. I mean, I have heard that Sarah's Day had gone through something similar. And you do feel less alone when you hear that someone in the public eye has it and they are sharing their experience with you. I mean, I am lucky that mine are low grade at the moment. I do have to go back in a year and see if there have been more changes, which I'm obviously hoping not.
Well, like Sophie, I have been detected for having some very low grade changes as well. And I do have to go back and have a pap smear now once every year to ensure that those changes are monitored. And it's quite a normal thing, but I feel like, as Sophie said, because it is a new test, people don't know. So when you get that call, I freaked out.
I burst into tears because I didn't quite understand it. And in that moment, you don't take in everything the doctor is saying. And
no.
I just think it is so, as you said, so important that people get tested because, to be completely transparent, I had put mine off for 5 years, which was a really stupid thing to do because you never know when these changes are going to occur. And it does give me some peace of mind now that I'm going to have one every year for the next little while.
And I think because we know cervical cancer is quite preventative if you do the right thing and get tested, obviously not in all circumstances, but you give yourself the best shot of picking something up sooner if you keep up to date with your tests.
Just lastly, I feel like we have to touch on this one. People are annoyed yet again at Sophie Kasia. Yesterday, she was caught out by Instagram page Celeb Spellcheck for flouting Melbourne's restrictions again. Now, she shared an Insta story of herself watching the Melbourne Vixens victory. And Celeb Spellcheck did some incredible investigation. They noticed that in the television screen, there were two people sitting on her couch who should not have been there. And she didn't also make it half obvious by the fact that she served up an enormous platter full of food for apparently herself and her children.
This is just so frustrating. I'm just so sick of her thinking she is above the rules.
And surprisingly, she's since deleted the Instagram story.
It's just so arrogant. Like, what needs to be done for her to get it through her head that she's not more important than everyone else?
Scary being you, isn't it?
It's a bit.
The way the kids all threaten to beat you up and call your names like briefcase wanker.
Oh, it's not been like that.
No, it wasn't for me either.
The privilege of the AFL continues with special allowances made to ensure the Brownlow medal went ahead on Sunday night. What do you guys think about this? Because I was appalled.
Are we really surprised? I mean, the AFL have been able to get away doing whatever they want this year because it seems that money talks in this country, well, and the AFL seems to be above everybody.
And a boys' club talks as well.
The AFL players, they've been granted special privileges all year long.
Yeah.
And then they seem to think that, oh, they've sacrificed a lot. Well, they've got to continue playing the game that they've wanted to play when so many other people are out of jobs, when so many other people haven't even seen their family for months on end.
Well, and I know we've seen special privileges in relation to them being allowed to, you know, do what they want in Queensland. But I was quite shocked that the AFL allowed Victorian teams to come back to Melbourne and hold celebrations in a venue in Melbourne.
Like, really?
What?
And this is before any changes to the lockdown laws.
Well, despite the changes, this still isn't allowed in the current lockdown.
Well, it makes me really concerned about what is going to happen when the grand final happens next week. Are there going to be secret grand final parties that are happening? Are there going to be, you know, people parading through the streets? Who knows what is going to go on?
Just to clarify, Melbourne players were at Channel 7 Studios in Melbourne, and there were other teams celebrating in different locations around the country.
Now, they were at socially distanced functions. So basically, they were set up in a way where people were supposedly, the couples were 1.5 meters apart from other couples.
Yeah, I just think it's all for show. I mean, I doubt they were keeping their distance once the cameras stopped rolling and they had a few drinks into them.
What pisses me off, though, is literally every Christmas event has been cancelled. Like, you can't go to Carols by Candlelight. They're all, you know, all the local Christmas events have been cancelled. But, oh, we can go sit in a football stadium and watch the game, and the AFL players can do whatever they want and socialise and drink, and it's ridiculous.
As much as I'm cut about Christmas celebrations being cancelled, I would be beside myself if I had had a family member pass away during COVID and they were only allowed to have 10 people or 20 people at their funeral, and then this shit's going on.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
What did you guys think about the whole red carpet situation? Because obviously there wasn't a red carpet in the traditional sense, but the WAGs very much did show off their clothing. Did you see it as maybe a distraction for everyone in Melbourne, you know, a nice thing to look at the fashion out there because everyone's been stuck inside in their loungewear? Or did you see it as quite tone deaf?
I got to say, I thought it was tone deaf. People showing off their wealth and wearing expensive fancy dresses to an event when Melbourne has been in lockdown for so long now.
Oh, look, I'm in two minds because, you know, we're ragging on the AFL, but I can see the positives of having the AFL season go ahead because it does bring a lot of joy to a lot of people who are stuck at home. People love watching the football.
So you're saying that you think people would like the dresses?
So yeah, so I'm saying the same thing goes, I suppose, with the Brownlow. Let's be honest, most people watch it to see what the wives and the girlfriends are wearing.
That being said, they were told by the AFL that it wasn't essential to stick to the black tie dress code. In saying that, as we touched on before with Sarah promoting the bridal boutique, is it good for some of the WAGs to be promoting some of these designers who are probably struggling as well?
Look, there's positive and negatives. I mean, I'm just putting myself in the shoes of people that are in the lockdown at the moment, and it would piss me off if I saw these WAGs showing off the beautiful dresses they were wearing in the events and thinking, well, why are you above me?
No, I get that about the fact that they're at an event that they probably shouldn't be at. But I also think, well, what are they meant to wear to this? Were they meant to rock up in the tracky dark?
Just off the topic of fashion, I was really frustrated because on the same day of the Brownlow, the Melbourne Vixens won the Suncorp Super Netball Premiership. Now, this is a massive story, well, should be a massive story in Victoria. And it was relegated to a one-page article in the Herald Sun.
The Brownlow took up the front page and the back page.
Yeah, exactly. So there's a little insert of the fact that, yeah, the Vixens had won about, you know, very small. And then the full page photo on the front and back page was of Lachie Neale winning the Brownlow. This pissed me off because not only did they not really get much coverage on the front or the back page, you know, the one article inside, but the AFL had a total of 11 pages of content in the newspaper. Wow. So there were 5 pages about Brownlow fashion, a double page spread about the night, and then 4 pages about the AFL Grand Final. Now, if the Richmond Tigers had won the Grand Final, I'm sure they would have not had one page written about them.
Do you think this is a sort of a political thing, whereas the AFL are saying to the paper, look, if you want to cover the AFL Grand Final, you have to print about the Brownlow and all of that kind of thing? Or do you think it's the fact that most people care more about the football than they do about the netball?
Well, I think they would perceive that most people care, but I mean, you've got to look at the huge number of women who want to be seeing more female sports publicised in the paper.
I don't get why they couldn't, you know, have the Brownlow on the front of the paper and the netball on the back. Like, not have, why do you need both?
Well, the thing that annoys me is if it was the Richmond women's football team that had won, they probably would have put it on the back page. And that was my point about the AFL. The AFL seemed to have a monopoly on the newspaper, and they seem to, you know, advantage different media who cover all of their various men's and women's events.
You know, working in the media, we are aware that the AFL tell journalists that if you don't promote the women's AFL, then we will not give you access to the men. So it
makes it incredibly tough for other female sports, because at the moment there is a quota where really journalists will only put in one female based sports story.
I used to work as a communication manager for the Adelaide Thunderbirds, and it was so difficult to get coverage about their sport in the paper. So I'm really shocked, though, because I would have thought winning a grand final might, you know, give you some good coverage.
I think what also caps off this quite vulgar display from the AFL is the fact that they cry poor, yet then have the money to dig up the dirt from the MCG, put it in a truck.
Not where the dirt, the grass.
Sorry, the grass.
the turf.
Well, there's a bit of dirt on there. The grass from the MCG, put it in a refrigerated truck and drive it all the way to Queensland.
I actually thought this was a joke. Like, what the hell? Are they that pig-headed that they think the MCG turf is so sacred that it needs to be flown or driven to Queensland? What the hell?
It's the most absurd thing I think I've ever heard.
One takeaway point is the AFL season will be over next week, but I'm just guessing there's going to be a bit of uproar over everyone's Mad Monday celebration. That's what will be next.
Apparently it's been cancelled, but we'll wait and see.
Well, I am intrigued to see that now the season is over, whether Hannah Orville, who dates a North Melbourne player, whether she will finally return home or whether she will stay in Queensland living it up with her brother.
I would put a bet on the fact that she'll be staying there with her mother, Sharon, who is now a Queensland resident.
Well, that's probably all we have time for. Thank you so much for joining us for today's episode. If you have enjoyed it, it'd be amazing if you could share where you're listening from on your Instagram and tag us at outspoken_the_podcast.
And if you did enjoy this episode, we'd love if you could help us out and leave us a review on the Apple Podcast charts. So many of you message in saying you love the podcast. So if you do want to help, go and leave us a review.
And join us in our podcast community on Facebook. It's Outspoken, the podcast community. And share your stories about your arguments with your brother and sister. I can't wait to read them.